Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, November 28th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold is absent tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Guthrie.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. The council has just adjourned from closed session where we discussed labor negotiations, and we have no report at this time. Item 3 on our agenda is our flag salute, and we're pleased this evening to have Girl Scout Cadet Troop 829 of Tres Condados. Did I pronounce that right?
Color Guard Advance. Color Guard Salute Colors. Please join me in saying the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Color Guard dismissed.
And if you would please join me in our invocation. O God, our Father, whose statutes are gracious and whose law is truth, bless the people of the City of Arroyo Grande and those in authority that they may ordain only those things as are for the welfare and good of the people and the glory of thy holy name. Amen. Okay, where did our Girl Scouts go? Do we have a spokesperson?
Would you like us to have a spokesperson?
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to know all about what you're doing, and I do want to make a comment as well. This color guard was obviously rehearsed their entry because you guys were right on the money, and it was really good to see you come up here and lockstep, and you didn't miss a beat. But we would be interested in hearing about what activities you've been involved in.
Okay, I'm Nancy Beckstrom, and my co-leader is Lyra Matamo. The girls this year are ninth graders, and so we're kind of starting out in our senior level of Girl Scouting. So we're beginning the road toward our gold awards. So each of them will be choosing a different gold award to earn, which is similar to the Eagle Scout Award, only we say much more difficult. But we can debate that later. But one thing that we do every year is we do a Locks of Love hair cutting extravaganza at Rontal's Salon the first Saturday in June. So we encourage you all to start growing your hair now so that it will be ready to...
a presentation this evening. And I would like to invite Michelle Stearns to join me at the podium. Good evening, Michelle. It's a real pleasure this evening for me to present to Michelle Mayor's commendation, and I'm going to read this commendation. This is a Mayor's commendation to Michelle Stearns on this 28th day of November 2006 in recognition of your outstanding work and exemplary skills in managing volunteers, designing and conducting crime prevention programs, and representing the Arroyo Grande Police Department and our community. I want to give you some additional background on Michelle's accomplishments, and we're very proud of them. And there's a note here that gives some additional background on some of the activities that I just mentioned. And the title of this, and it resembles a press release, but I wanted to share with you that Michelle recently received the California Crime Prevention Officers Association recognition. And this is, again, for her outstanding work for the Arroyo Grande Police Department and the community. And there's additional programs that you're involved in, Citizens Assisting Police, the Citizens Academy, School Crossing Guards, the Santa Cop Program, Senior Education, Business Outreach, and a few others. And we're very proud of Michelle. I had an opportunity to attend the celebration dinner for the recent graduates. And we're very, again, appreciative of your hard work. And we have a very special recognition to go along with this mayor's commendation. This is a $10,000 gift certificate.
Just, see?
So you don't have to play the lottery, but it is my privilege to present this to you. Okay. Good. Good. And we would certainly be grateful if you would say a few words. Okay.
I'm only going to say a few because I'm just getting over bronchitis. This is the greatest community I've ever worked for. They're so supportive of the police department. It's just an honor to work here.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on items that are not published or noticed. We would ask that if you come forward to share your recommendations, suggestions, observations, whatever it might be, that you adhere to the 3-minute rule and please address the council as a whole. Anyone who would like to come forward, once again, items not on this evening's agenda. Okay, after all of that, nobody? Okay. We will close item 7, and we will move to the consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of items 8A through 8L, it appears, if you're following along on the agenda this evening. This is a group of items that the council normally approves in one motion unless there is a member of the council who would like to pull an individual item or items for individual action or further discussion or clarification. This is also an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward once again and comment or address items on the consent agenda. Once again, that's consent items 8A through 8L. If there are members of the public who would like to come forward on any of those items, this would be your opportunity. No one? Okay. We'll close the public comment portion of consent. And what is the will of the council? Any items this evening?
I have none.
Okay. I have none either. And with that, I will entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8L.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Mr. Mayor, for the record, I need to announce my indirect conflict of interest as it relates to my relationship with the Dixon Trust and the consent agenda item 8J. The record should indicate my abstention on this item.
Okay. We can do that. Anything to read in there this evening?
There is, Mayor Ferrara. Item 8J is includes an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending the zoning.
Tonight, 9A is our first public hearing, consideration of appeal of the Planning Commission's approval of conditional use permit 06-005. The location is 231 South Halcyon Road.
Good evening, Mayor Ferrara and members of the council. This is an appeal of Planning Commission's approval of a conditional use permit. Specifically, the appeal relates to a condition of approval that was imposed on that project. Just for a little background, the Planning Commission considered the conditional use permit on October 3rd, 2006, and subsequently adopted a resolution that approved the conditional use permit. This resolution included several conditions, including condition number 15, which was imposed by the Public Works Department and related to the city's pavement cut policy. Specifically that cuts are prohibited in any pavement that's been overlaid in the last 5 years. The applicant then filed the appeal on October 13th. Just a little background on the specifics of the project. It is located at 231 Halcyon Road, which is the northeast corner of South Halcyon and Dodson Way. It's in the office mixed-use zoning district and surrounded by a mix of office and multifamily uses. The project site's approximately a quarter acre in size and consists of demolishing two existing single-family homes and constructing a new mixed-use building consisting of 3,700 square feet of ground floor office and one upstairs apartment. And the project does comply with all applicable development standards as indicated in the resolution adopted by the Planning Commission. Because the project is located on a corner lot, it can connect to utilities in either South Halcyon Road or Dotson Way. South Halcyon was overlaid more than 5 years ago, whereas Dotson Way, the segment that's the frontage of the property, was last overlaid in May of 2004. The conditions of approval that were approved for the project allowed the applicant to connect to either South Halcyon or Dotson Way with the condition that if it was South Halcyon, the applicant must overlay project frontage to the center line, whereas for Dotson Way, the applicant would be required to overlay the street from gutter to gutter, the full width of the street, and that was to comply with the curb cut policy. The basis for the applicant's appeal was this issue was also discussed at the Planning Commission meeting and then later brought forward in the appeal, where the utility connections to South Halcyon Road would require traffic disruption on a major arterial. There will be a pavement joint required along Dotson Way regardless of utility connections due to the connection, the Commission's action, which was approving the project with the condition as imposed by Public Works. However, that being said, during the meeting and in the motion, the Commission did state support to modify the condition, but they felt that because it was council policy, referring to the pavement cut policy, that decision should be made by the council, not the Planning Commission. There are several alternatives presented for the project, and that is to adopt the attached resolution, which would deny the appeal, tentatively uphold the appeal, and direct staff to return with a supporting resolution. Direct that all utilities connect to South Halcyon instead of Dotson, or provide direction to staff. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Questions or clarifications on the staff report for Ryan? Go ahead.
Hey, Ryan, in the staff report, there are some estimated costs comparing the three different alternatives. And it appears from at least the staff's determination that the most cost-effective approach would be to actually enter in at the Halcyon. Is that correct? So is the applicant or the city more concerned about the disruption to a major arterial corridor as opposed to a collector street?
As far as the specifics of the numbers, those came directly from the Public Works Department, and I would defer those questions to Director of Public Works.
This is very similar to the project that we had on Elm Street. We had a four-lane arterial, and we had some major disruption in that particular street when those improvements were made. We didn't have any disruptions in the traffic flow that I'm aware of. I think it's actually a good location. We're pretty far away from Fair Oaks, so we could taper and move traffic over to one lane, get them past this construction, and then back opened out to three lanes as they approach Grand Avenue. So I don't see there being a major disruption for the amount of time that they're going to need to make the connections.
Okay. And were these cost projections that are presented in the staff report presented to the applicant, and are there, and maybe the applicant can speak towards this, are there discrepancies in the cost, do you know? At this point,
had two full lanes blocked off at times. Do you know on Halcyon? Are we looking at two full lanes to get to the utilities, as it was at least for part of that Elm Street project? And how many days do you think we're going to disrupt Halcyon?
Well, I certainly don't think that we would be taking both lanes at the same time. The construction can be phased so that the one lane is taken at a time. As far as the amount of time, you know, that depends on the contractor. But based on, you know, my experience, it shouldn't take more than a week or so to get the connections made and the trench paved with some coal mix to get it back into service. And then they'll come back later in a day or two and grind and repave with hot asphalt. So somewhere between 5 to 7 or 10 days, somewhere in there, I would think.
And again, similar to the Elm Street operation, is there, would you expect this to be like a 9 to 4 type of operation the rest of the time the lanes would be fully open, or would they be closed completely during any part of that?
Well, that certainly can be a requirement where the traffic is allowed to use the road between the rush hour of 7 to 9, and then the contractor can do his operations from 9 to 3, and the road can be back open during the evening rush hour. So that certainly can be a requirement of the project.
This is somewhat based on the discussion we had earlier today. This relates directly to the pavement cut policy and half the street or not half the street. If we were to follow the applicant's direction here and do the half street, if doing the entire street means that there's zero maintenance operations, what would the doing half of the street, on a scale of 1 to 10, mean as far as the increased maintenance to the city as far as doing half the street versus the full street?
Well, certainly, any time that there's going to be a cut in the road, it's going to degrade the road and the service life of the road. And there's been many, many studies that indicate and show this. Basically, I think that there's one that was done that I remember done in San Francisco that said that when you do cut and make pavement cuts, the road can be degraded as much as 30 to 50%. Which means of a service life of 20 to 25 years, you're cutting the life down to, you could be cutting it down to 12 and a half years or 15 years. So what that means to us is it means that we have to go out there and expend city funds to do the routine maintenance, the crack sealing, and eventually overlay the site at some point.
Okay. Well, the Mayor Pro Tem asked my question. Any other questions, clarifications? Okay, good. If there are no other questions, we're going to open up the public hearing portion of this item. And as is our practice, we invite the appellant to come forward and present any views, observations, so on and so forth.
Good evening. I'm Mark Vasquez. I'm the representative of the property owner. Essentially, as Ryan pointed out in the staff presentation, the reason that we're here is this issue of the street and where we take the utilities. I believe you got a letter that was referred to by Mr. Spagnola regarding our situation, our position on this. What we're trying to do here is the best way to...
Mark, excuse me. Is a little green light on your mic on down below? Or is there one in front?
I don't see a light anywhere. You have to stand close to it.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. The reason that we've proposed to do this the way that we're suggesting is in order to as I mentioned in the letter, in order to try to minimize the effect of this project on the city's street system, but also to accommodate some of the other conditions of the project, one of which relates directly to the request for this cut in the street. And if you looked through the conditions, the Planning Commission made a condition specifically regarding the fire protective services and the backflow check valve and its location, which we have no problem with, except that if we were to try to take that water from Halcyon Road, we have no way to get it up through there that meets the city's requirements for the main access to that service. In other words, way and avoid cutting up Halcyon. It avoids the traffic disruption. It avoids additional cuts out there. And as it was described to you, and your questions were, what is the effect of cuts on the street system? And our understanding is that obviously we have to cut where we have to go to the water main. That's a small area, as was shown on an exhibit that was given to you in your packet, to go out to pick up the water to bring in the water service for the project, for fire and domestic services, and abandon an existing water meter that's out there. From my understanding, again, we would have to abandon the water service that exists there either way, which means we have to cut the street. We don't have a choice because the water meter that's there now is in the street area where it's going to not be allowed to be kept. So given that, that seemed to make the most sense. Secondly, we're not talking about cutting the street out to the center line. We're talking about grinding it and overlaying it. So it's not a complete cut. Actually, you'll have a fabric of the existing street left below the where the joint is. And I guess that's really the issue. It's not a cut. It's a joint. And if you go and you look at the streets, I was driving today, and I happened to, because this was coming up, it was on my mind, and I happened to look as I was driving down Grand Avenue, and I believe that the joint that you're going to see is going to be similar to that of where down the middle of the travel lanes, not the middle of the travel lanes, but on the striped portion of the travel lanes, you'll see joints all the way down Grand Avenue where they make pavement layers, and they have to abut. They can't pave the whole thing in one big chunk. So you see the same kind of a joint structure throughout the street system everywhere, even though there's not a cut made. The important part here, I think, is that if we grind the street down 2 inches to do this overlay, there's still going to be street material below that that keeps that fabric together. It's not a cold joint out there that is going to break away from the other part. It's still part of that continuous fabric. So in our estimation, it seemed the best solution was to do the take the utilities from Dodson Way, and the condition as it came out, again, due to the interpretation of the policy, was to, we could do that. We just had to, doesn't make sense to me in both an economic sense, a logistical sense, or an environmental sense. Why are we taking this material up and hauling it away to just put the same thing back down? I think because of the fabric underneath of the existing roadway that your maintenance will be very similar to what you would find in your normal roads at the joints where they stop paving one layer and bring in the next layer and pave it in. So for those reasons, that's why we're requesting that you reconsider this particular issue. We do not feel that going to Talcion is a viable alternative for the reasons that I stated. We're only going there to get water in one street or the other, and the access is not sufficient to go back and service that line after the building is built. So the real optimal place to take it is from Dodson, which makes the most sense to get that fire water into the site. Otherwise, we would have to have the big double detector check right out on Halcyon Road right in front of the building, which I don't think anybody wants. So those are the reasons that we've made the appeal. We would appreciate your consideration of it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mark?
Just one quick one. Just to clarify, the abandoned meter would be abandoned from Dodson, so you would have to cut Dodson anyway, even if you used Halcyon.
That's correct. Currently, the meter is in the area that would be under pavement when it's complete, when our pave-out is complete.
And in the process of abandoning it means that you have to cut the street. You can't just cap it at the parkway or something.
Yes, is that they would want it abandoned.
Any other? Yes.
Quick question, just for clarification, Mark. Are there also sewer services you're going to have to be connect to as well, or not?
Actually, the existing sewer laterals that are there are sufficient in size to service this project.
All right. So just water. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anyone else here representing the appellant, or are you it tonight?
I'm it.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay, we'll bring this back to the council. This is a public hearing, and after the appellant, we can open it up for
the material before us. I think that I'm not in favor of necessarily changing the policy, but I am certainly in favor of our appeal process. And in this particular instance, given the information I have in front of me, it does seem like to me it's the prudent approach is to cut to the center line of Dodson and do the improvements as required in the conditions of approval for this project on Dodson, and to go ahead and do the overlay in an expeditious and, I guess, environmentally conscious way. And so I'm in favor at this point of upholding the appeal in regards to this particular item.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to ask Don Spagnuolo a question. If we were to proceed in the manner in which the applicant's appealing and cutting that center line on Dodson, what does this do to the street in terms of longevity?
Well, certainly, anytime you cut the street, you know, you're going to have, you know, some sort of maintenance or reduction in service life of that street. How much that would be depends on a lot of different things, weather and wear and tear and trucks and those sorts of things. But it's certainly not going to be the 20 to 25 year life that we usually expect out of a newly paved street. Some of the comments that were brought up by the applicant, you know, there is a big difference between grinding and saw cutting. And the saw cutting, when you saw cut up the pavement, you actually cut through the whole mat, the whole thickness of the asphalt. And then you try to build it back up. And there's going to be some sort of, you know, joint there where water and can get down in there and degrade the subbase, which holds up the asphalt. So, but when we grind, we do not grind the whole mat. We just grind off a little bit to get a new wearing surface on there to cover up any kind of cracks, therefore, you know, keeping the integrity of this asphalt mat. So there's two different things there. One is saw cutting, one is grinding. But certainly, to answer your question, the service life is definitely going to be compromised and certainly lowered to a point where it could be almost half, you know, very at this point.
And what does it cost us when we repave that street at the end of 25 years or 20 years or whatever it is? What is it going to cost us to repave the street?
Well, the interesting thing about this particular street is that it had never been paved, and when it was built, after it was built, it stayed that way for about 30 years or so. And I don't know if any of you remember, but we used to crack seal that street annually. And over time, the whole street became a crack sealing exercise. So the particular residential streets are harder than the arterial streets because we have money that we get from the state and federal government, but we can only apply those to the collectors and arterial streets. So the residential streets are the toughest ones to find funding for, and that's why we tried to guard those as much as possible. So as far as the cost goes, it was, I think the way we did it was we did it with our own forces. And so we ended up doing this particular street with our own crews. We did half at a time, and we spent about $27,000 each time. And that's how we ended up getting this road repaved. So we had to use a little bit of ingenuity to finally, after these many years, repave this particular street. That's what it takes in these residential areas. And normally, if we had a contractor come in, it probably would be double that.
So in present-day dollars, then it was $54,000 to to pave that street.
Right.
And if it lasts 25 years, we're talking about a little bit over $2,000 a year is what the cost is.
Mm-hmm.
So if the say we lost 5 years worth of that street, life on that street, that's $10,000. So there is a cost to the city involved in denying the or in upholding this appeal.
Absolutely, yeah. There's going to be some maintenance costs down the road.
Okay, and what are we talking about? And I know that I saw some figures, and there were some differences, and maybe we can get the applicant back up here to clarify this. In the staff report.
Okay, well, I didn't go through that, but as I laid out in our letter, using the figures that are required by the city in our engineer's estimate, which will come forth as we do the project, I laid it out in the letter there that essentially to grind, and these numbers only apply to the southerly part of the street, not the northerly part of the street that we are proposing to do. This is the additional part of the street that is being conditioned. They require us to allow for $1.70 a square foot to grind the 2 inches of asphalt off to do the overlay. They require us to include $50 a cubic yard for disposal of that ground material, and then they require us to put in $1.35 per square foot for the new overlay over the top. That's how I came up with the numbers that are on here, which come up to $9,751 and change. That's based on the engineer's estimate that we would have to provide to the city and bond for to do the work out there. That's the number. That's the difference between doing half the street and doing the whole street in overlay. And those are numbers given to us from the spreadsheet that the city uses for our bonding requirements.
Now, I'm a little bit confused here. Which half street are we talking about? The southern half of Dotson Way?
Yeah, this number that I've got in there, the $9,751, that's for the additional area that would be required if we did the street gutter to gutter versus doing it to the center line.
Okay.
If I might add one more thing, just as a response to what Don said about the abandonment, I think given the situation as to how we've laid this out, it would be more prudent to do what we're suggesting and overlay that entire half street, the north half of the street, and abandon that water service now than go back in 5 years and cut the street, because guaranteed if you go back and do that, you're going to have maintenance issues because you've now cut the street 5 years from now. So, I mean, now would be the time to do it as one thing down the whole project frontage. You'd have a uniform mat rather than a cut that is.
So if you were to do that, if you were to do this today, you'd be overlaying the whole northern side of the street.
That's correct.
And if we did it as this, just a cut in 5 years, say, or 4 years, there'd be a patch job. Would that be the? Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got mixed feelings about this. We have a policy in place that's designed to protect the streets and make the streets last as long as possible. And that's based on a time basis. If the project comes in within 5 years of the street being repaved, we have this policy in place. It seems to me that no matter what we do here, we're going to see some sort of deterioration of the street at some future time. We're going to lose some life on this project or some life on the street from this project. I don't want to see the policy thrown out, but it seems to me that in light of what's happening here, that perhaps the least damage to the street might be coming by way of accepting the appeal and upholding the appeal. So I can reluctantly support that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
The answer is Ms. Costello's question. Actually, generally, one more question that I have for Don. if we did the street in two halves a while ago, does that mean there's a joint down the middle of the street right now?
Yes, but I do want to point out that that's two different things. When you're constructing the road, you're going to have joints as the paving machine. It could be three passes. It could be two passes. Wherever you have that pass, there's going to be a joint. That joint will be a hot joint, not a cold joint. And that's a big difference when you're paving, because that continues the mat to be a full section. Whereas if you come back now, like we're doing now, and make a joint, it's quite different. It's two separate things. So yes, you are going to have a problem. But when you're constructing the road and it's still hot, there really isn't. There's that melding together of the asphalt from both sides.
So when we did it in two halves, we did it in two halves, but two halves at the same time.
Exactly, okay. Exactly.
And what do we do on the end of these runs to join them to the existing pavement, for instance? What did we do between Dodson where it joins Halcyon for that joint? Which, you know, because that was obviously a cold joint.
Right. We grind along the front there, and we make a deep
down the road that 3 or 4 years down the road that we would be making some sort of a cut in this that would, in fact, would not have any overlay associated with it. As strong a statement as you've made, Don, just common sense makes me think that the joint in the middle of the road is significant, but it's not half the life of the road. Whereas the cut, you know, the actually ripping the road up and cutting this, I don't know whether it be 5 feet wide, but to the middle of the road would have a really significant effect on that section of the road. So I'm inclined in this case, again, not to throw out the policy, but in this case to permit the appeal to just go halfway up to the road and make the joint at that point. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. You know, I'm taking a look at the cut policy, and I'm listening to the comments of my colleagues up here, and I'm trying to reconcile that with the pavement cut policy. Don, when did we do this? When did this policy go into effect?
This was approved on March 8th of 2005.
Okay. Well, then I think if you look at the second paragraph, and this is the second sentence in the second paragraph is really the part of this policy that attracted my attention. It says, in the event the pavement cut is allowed, the roadway shall be repaired to the condition prior to the cut in accordance with the City of Arroyo Grande standard plans, whatever that is. And all pavement markings and markers shall be replaced in kind. So I guess what's up for interpretation is that if we do half of the roadway here, does that in fact restore it to its prior condition, or does the repair qualify as the condition prior to the cut? And I think the point that the Mayor Pro Tem brings up in terms of the nature of the and characteristics of the joint, I took some reassurance from how you described, you know, how you would, you know, overlap and put some form of an adhesive to make the best of a bad situation. And I'm thinking using that same technology, that same practice, if you will, along the center line, you know, might work to try. And I really don't think that we're setting aside our policy by doing that, because I think there is a certain amount of discretion that we have in terms of interpreting this particular portion of the policy. Because I think within the realm of reasonableness, we are restoring the roadway as best as we can to its condition prior to the cut. And so with that, I'm going to join my colleagues I'll support the appellant in this particular case. Okay, with that, anything else? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that the council tentatively uphold the appeal and direct staff to return with supporting resolution in regards to use permit 06-005.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, can I ask one question before we go on to the next item? I know I heard everyone say they don't want to throw out the policy, and I agree with what you said about interpreting the policy. I think this can be done within this existing policy. My question was, does the council want any revisions to the policy as a result of this? Our only concern is this practice of requiring the full width of the street construction be done. It's something we're fairly consistently implementing. And so if there's a kind of a policy decision or direction of the council to not require that, that would be helpful to just give us that direction, and we can, without throwing out the policy, could reflect something that would implement that more in that way in the future.
Well,
this is a unique case.
My own personal position on that is that the policy right now, the way it's written, gives us some discretion to consider other circumstances that might surround the particular case in question. And so, I mean, there may be other situations where pavement restoring the pavement for the span of the entire street would be appropriate. So from my standpoint, I would not want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Just, you know, if that's the practice that you have in place, let's see.
Okay.
That's me talking. I don't know how you feel.
I concur.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. That takes us to 9B, our second public hearing. So, consideration of appeal of Planning Commission's approval of conditional use permit case number 06-006, East Branch Street and Stanley Avenue, Paulding Middle School and the Bus Barn.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Background on this project is that it was a conditional use permit to establish an operation and maintenance facility at the Paulding Middle School, which would consist of a 36 by 200 foot metal building and three modular office units that would be placed on site. The project went to the Planning Commission. They approved the project with approximately 80 conditions. The applicant, after the approval, appealed to the City Council seeking relief from specific conditions of approval, and in your packet is the letter from the applicant. After that, staff met with the applicant and their representatives and worked to discuss revisions in the project in an effort to reduce costs of improvements associated with it. You'll see that there's revisions in the staff report and in the resolution, and mainly these support the conditions generated by the Planning Commission and the Architectural Review Committee. Although staff conditions were modified based upon project revisions, and talking with the applicant and their representatives, we've all come to an agreement of these conditions. Going over some of the more substantial revisions, first is Stanley Street improvements. The original conditions were generated based on the assumption that the street would be ultimately maintained by the city, and these conditions sought to upgrade the street to city standards. This included installing curb, gutter, and sidewalks on both sides of the street, widening the street to a 52-foot right-of-way, 40 feet curb-to-curb, and installation of street trees and tree wells. The revised conditions are based on the fact that the Lucia Marr School District will not ask the city to maintain Stanley Avenue, and with that, the improvements would be a minimum 24-foot wide pavement from the intersection of Brand Street to the end of the street. It also specifies materials to be used in the thick energy dissipating device. Revised conditions include a filtering system such as a bioswale or a fossil filter, improvements to correct existing and future conditions that may cause erosion to the creek, and these conditions are based on the final plan would be approved by the Director of Public Works and any applicable regional, state, or federal agencies. The conditions generated by the Architectural Review Committee was based on their concerns out of screening the building from view on Branch Street and surrounding areas. The ARC conditions were based on a pretty informal landscape plan, and the ARC specified type of trees and vines and location of those. Staff now recommends that the intent of the ARC, they're concerned about screening, be developed into a professional landscape plan by the applicant, brought back to the Architectural Review Committee to see if it meets their ideas of screening of the project. Staff also recommends waiving impact fees based upon the fact that the district is really relocating this operation and maintenance facility of the same size from the Aurora Grande High School over to Paulding Middle School. But staff does recommend retaining any permit fees that reimburse city staff for their time associated with this project. With that, the recommendation is to adopt the attached resolution upholding the appeal, thereby approving conditional use permit 06002, but changing conditions of approval consistent with staff recommendations regarding the modified project and waiving associated impact fees. Staff is here to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Questions, clarifications in the staff report? Councilmember Dickens?
Hey, Jim, do you know offhand what the width of the decomposed granite pedestrian pathway is going to be next to the 24-foot wide Stanley Avenue?
The applicant just gave me a hand signal that it would be 4 feet, right. And they are here. That could answer more specific questions of the plan.
Okay, and then the other question dealt primarily, maybe the applicant can address this, and that would be the impact fees. There was mention about, I think it's a retrofit program, and then possibly extending not only the old maintenance area, but the possibly some facilities at the AG High School campus. And it's more of just a curiosity question.
Engineers designing this up and bringing it to the city staff so that we can look at it, review it, make sure that it meets the goals that we're looking for the creek. So it could be we're leaving it open to a bioswale or a fossil filter, some sort of drop inlet. But it really will depend on the engineering, how much water is coming out there and how they want to deal with that water.
And the essential reason for this is because we don't want to have some sort of detention facility there that doesn't work at this part of the creek.
That's correct. And the staff report referenced a recent study saying that detention basins probably aren't the best solution on in this area in the city.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
This may be more for Tim, but given the whole agency, superior agency, and whether this is approvable or not, the drainage system in particular, since it won't be built at the same time as the building, or it doesn't appear there will be, what would be the method by which we would ensure that the drainage program was ever implemented, that it wasn't designed but never built? And normally we would bond, or it would be built as part of the project.
Typically we'd bond for it if there was a delay.
And we can do
we'd
that
require a bond for it, yeah.
We can do that in this case. All right, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, then we will open the public hearing portion of 9B and invite the appellant.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner at Oasis Associates, and this evening representing Lucia Mar Unified School District, as I do on many of their land use issues. I wanted to thank you for your consideration this evening and respectfully request that you adopt the resolution upholding the appeal for and approving conditional use permit 06-002 with the revised conditions as recommended by staff. And one other correction, if I'm correct, that Exhibit A is part of that resolution under general conditions to include the 36-by-200-foot operations and maintenance facility, but exclude the 3 modular office buildings. We're in the process of processing those through the Division of State Architect. With that said,
Can you elaborate on that, please, Carol?
I minimize some of that confusion and some of the impacts related to certain conditions, it was decided, the district and school board decided to go ahead and process the three relocatable buildings that are currently on site through the Division of State Architect. Those will go through a rigorous review as well, because there's an inspector from the DSA that comes to look at those as well. So they look at life, fire, and safety. With that said, the operations and maintenance building itself will be under the jurisdiction of the city and all of the components. And frankly, all of the site work, if you will, really will be under the jurisdiction of the city. So it's only the physical buildings, the relocatables themselves, that will be reviewed by the Division of State Architect.
Okay. Thank you.
Unfortunately, we didn't seize the opportunity during the Planning Commission hearing to express the district's concern with the conditions that really had fiscal impacts on the project. But I wanted to assure you this evening that it's the district's intent to pursue compliance with all of the conditions that really relate to the physical components of the projects. And that has to do with the building and fire code, the grading and drainage aspects, and the landscape aspects as well. So there's a very clear, hopefully, distinction that came through the two pieces of correspondence in the back of your staff report, as well as in staff's recommendations to you. I do want to thank the mayor and the city manager and the director of public works and the planning director and his staff for working with us these last few weeks to try to understand the district's role and perspective. And I think conversely, for all of us to understand the city's expectations and requirements as well. I appreciate the opportunity to build that consensus, and what I realized through that consensus building process, that there is truly a similarity between the city and the district when it comes to your individual responsibilities and care and concern for the expenditure of taxpayer dollars. I think it's important that council understand that the O&M facility is actually just one of many projects that is being funded by bond money, finite amount of bond money as well. And it's the impact fees that we are asking for your consideration to waive this evening, because those truly are related to new development and the impacts that are related to new development as opposed to a relocated facility. Since I've worked so hard with staff and they've worked so hard with us to come up with this recommendation, I just wanted to close by introducing actually Kevin Baker, who is the Director of Facilities Maintenance and Operations, because he's here to answer any of your specific questions. And on behalf of the district and the school board and the superintendent, I just want to thank you very much for taking time out for us again and for your consideration this evening.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Carol?
Just one. In thinking about the actual operations of this building, particularly as it relates to traffic generation, have you guys thought about what the traffic generation is here at all? I mean, we are, granted, it's a facility that's just being relocated, but it's being relocated from an area where we're hoping to achieve significant traffic improvement into an area that's already heavily traffically impacted. And I'm wondering what you guys have thought about as far as the traffic generation that this building will generate in this area.
I think that I might ask Kevin to address that, because I think it's predominantly the operations employees. There are no additional students coming to this facility. So I think the amount of traffic generated by this relocation would not be substantial. I also think that the Public Works Director would have advised us these last few weeks if there was a true concern for additional traffic, because we have worked out street improvements that certainly will function better than they do now, since we have a dirt road, if you will. We will still be responsible for the maintenance of those. So I believe that was thought about in the big picture and that ultimately, if there's going to be future build-out of any facilities, that there would be future build-out of the roadway and obviously dedication of the maintenance of that roadway to the city itself.
Okay, thank you. Kevin, did you want to come up for just a second?
Good evening. Kevin Baker, Director of Facilities, LUCMR. We return at about 2:15, just prior to school letting out. So I think it's about a wash, to be honest. We don't think we're going to be increasing traffic, and I don't think we're going to be minimizing any. It's kind of a wash based on the times we show up and the times we leave. So
you guys refuel every day? Is that basically how you get to 50?
They refuel probably three times a week.
Okay. So it's not quite
so.
All right.
I had a question on the actual activity. I'm still a little bit fuzzy on exactly how this is going to add to the activity that's out there now. That's, you know, what is going to be new about the operation once you relocate? Let me get a little more specific. Does this involve at all bus maintenance?
No, it does not involve bus maintenance.
Okay, so bus traffic through the village?
Bus traffic through the village will remain just the way it is currently.
Pretty much the way it is now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so, again, just a quick rundown on the scope of maintenance activities that will now occur out there.
We'll have a place to store materials that we use to for repair, lumber, paint, electrical shop, glass shop, carpenter shop, grounds, equipment, maintenance equipment, and all the equipment that goes with the carpenters and all that stuff, and a break room, and parking, basically, is what really is all the scope of business that's conducted in the facility.
Okay. And let me ask a question of staff as well. How long do we assume that maintenance responsibilities will remain with the school district as opposed to something that we would inherit? How long is, what are people thinking about in terms of maintenance responsibilities?
Sorry, you're talking about the maintenance of the street?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that would remain the same until it was brought up to city standards. At any time the school district chooses to upgrade the street to city standards, then we would agree to take it over at the time. So it really falls in the ballpark of the school district when they want to do that.
Okay. Okay.
And we would make those improvements to bring it up to their current standards before they took it into their maintenance program.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question to staff?
Sure.
Tim, I'll just go ahead and ask the question because there seems to be a little confusion in regards to this question and what is our preview of this particular location, because it's my understanding that in most school sites that it really is reviewed at the state level and not at the local jurisdictions. Whoever wants to.
The school district has the option of having the local land use authority, the city, review its plans for any improvements, development, or the state. This comes, I think, as a surprise. It's a surprise to me that the project's kind of been segmented. So I don't, and that scares me because I don't know the impact with regard to the conditions of approval. I think I heard Ms. Florence say that they would comply with most of the conditions of approval. That always leaves me a bit confused myself. But I also, as I understand it, it's the modular buildings alone that the state, or apparently they're turning over to the state for general approval. You know, I'd be concerned with issues such as landscaping around those buildings, all the tie-ins that we normally require. And I think what I heard Ms. Florence say was that they planned on complying with all the conditions of approval relative to everything except for the structures themselves. So with regard to the general issue, there I have never heard it split out like this, but with modular buildings, sort of anything goes.
And before Mrs. Florence responds to that, I'm going to take the question one step further, because there's a request from the school district to waive certain fees, and those certain fees are based on relocation. That's assuming that the other location is never built upon, but we don't have discretion into the future of that other location if the district then chooses to go to the state for their review. Then there actually could be additional construction at that particular time. Not that that's the plan. I understand that, but we're talking about into the future. Would that trigger specific fees such as sewer, water, typical things that regardless of whether it was at the city's discretion or at the state review level?
To the best of my knowledge, we would have no vehicle to impose those requirements if they sought only state approval. So I guess the answer to that would be no. And the manager wanted me to clarify the specific reason, if this was a pure educational facility, we would have no control over its land use elements, but this is not.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
I think.
Initially, the project started to go through state review and approval. The school district submitted it to the city for information purposes only. We determined through the building official that the maintenance facility would be appropriately processed by the city. And at that point, we converted the state's and district's information item into a conditional use permit application.
Okay. Having worked with a state architect for about 2 years in a slightly different capacity, but dealing primarily with their mission, both in day-to-day and also during emergencies and in the aftermath of emergencies, it became clear through that relationship that their primary mission is K-12 and community colleges in buildings that are occupied by students. That's their primary mission. They review plans, they inspect buildings, they put their final stamp of approval. Secondarily, they do have some authority or, I should say, oversight over staff buildings that are occupied routinely for the same reason: student, staff, and faculty, safety, integrity of the building, which kind of gets at what you were saying, Carol. They can look at the integrity of the modulars or the structures. That's their job. Maintenance facilities itself, where they're not heavily impacted or inhabited by staff, certainly not students, then they have to draw the line somewhere. They simply don't have the staff to embrace and inspect all of those different types and categories of structures. So I can see here where certainly the modular buildings, if they're going to be used as offices or similar kinds of a function that would be occupied, that the state architect would in fact have a role here. But again, I want to underscore a comment that you made, Carol, that does not affect the surrounding or the environment of the setting, and certainly the city then has, based on the nature of these conditions, has that oversight. So I'm sort of
to actually go out and survey the site, exactly how we will mitigate for stormwater runoff and the potential for erosion. But we will be working closely with your public works director to come to an appropriate resolution of those items.
Okay. Well, we've had this conversation before, and whatever position the council takes, I think one thing that's paramount in our minds certainly is ensuring an adequate facility to provide that runoff, and then most importantly, the impacts on the creek system, paramount, at least in my mind. So that is going to have to be worked out to the satisfaction and of staff. If there's one area where perhaps there will be little compromise from my perspective, it would be that area.
And I want to assure that we don't expect to compromise that aspect of the project either.
Okay.
And that's why staff's recommended condition clarifies that that must be taken care of. If it were not, then it would come back to council at that time.
Okay. All right. At this time, we will open it up for general public comment, if you would come forward.
Hi, my name is Cliff Branch. I represent the newly approved Cherokee Creek project. We have no problem with this at all, and any concessions are whatever the city works out, we have no objection. We would like to point out, just in terms of, there's going to be five houses on Myrtle Street, two-story. During the winter time, you look across the creek, particularly from the top stories. I was over there checking out the view plane. We're just on the other side of the creek. The only request we have, we've never seen the landscaping plan. We just kind of found out about this, very recently. Didn't have a chance to attend the, wasn't aware of the city planning commission meetings. So our concern is only they've got the 200-foot barn, and then apparently there's going to be maybe a yard at the end of that that gets fenced in for storage or whatever. We don't have an objection. We just would like that the landscape plan, that maybe the city council can put it in, or maybe the school district, that the landscape plan just take into account the view shed coming across the creek, so that we don't necessarily just look into a chain link yard with a bunch of equipment and stuff. My guess is that if they approach us at the proper time, we'd even pay for the landscaping. But I'm hoping that in the landscape plan, it will just have a clause in there that says we will consider,
however you want to define stakeholders. In this particular case, I would consider a potential view shed or a view shed review, whatever the case may be, to be an issue that would be important to a stakeholder, namely yourself, and others as well. My suggestion would be, put your heads together with a school district. I know that you've got a background in landscaping. I know you've done some nice work. So make some suggestions, some recommendations, work with them, and we come away with a win-win.
Okay. I just don't know what that processes in that. I understand there's an appeal and there's landscaping conditions, which I have no idea. I just was asking basically the city council or the staff.
Well, I don't think the landscaping plan is done yet.
Oh, it's not finished.
No, there were some conditions regarding the intent for the landscaping plan, but the recommendation is to require it to come back to ARC to make sure it accommodates the intent of what the ARC recommendations were.
So I guess I'll write a letter to the city and just request that the view shed is take into account, and we'd love to cooperate and probably help out in some way if it was necessary, for at least from our view shed. Okay.
Okay. Maybe you can exchange business cards. Any other members of the public that would like to come forward on this item? This would be your opportunity. Last chance. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing portion of 9B. And we'll bring this back to the council, and we'll start with Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have no particular problems with following staff's recommendations here, that we go ahead and adopt the attached resolution that does uphold the appeal with the changes in the conditions of approval as they've been recommended by staff, with particular emphasis on the creek protection. And I also have no problem waiving the associated impact fees, but not the permit fees. I think it would be appropriate to keep those in place.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I've reviewed the staff report quite thoroughly and looked at the conditions, the original conditions and the amended conditions that staff is recommending, and at each response. And by the way, this is actually a really well laid out staff report. I really appreciate it. It tells us, where we were with this appeal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I don't have too much trouble with most of the issues. I think there are two of them in particular. One, I'd like to see some sort of bonding requirement for the drainage. I think we would certainly do that, but some sort of bonding requirement once the drainage plan is in fact approved. I too don't have any trouble with the waiving of the fees here. I actually have a little bit of condition 56 had to do with the tree wells. I understand that if we don't put in the sidewalk, it sounds like the tree wells wouldn't be necessary. But at some point, a sidewalk is going to go in here. I have to believe that at some point that's going to happen. If the tree wells aren't in place, then when the sidewalk goes in, the trees are dead. So my impression here would be that go ahead and put those tree wells in today because they're going to have to go in somewhere in the future. We've dealt with this all over town where if the tree wells aren't in place, that when the sidewalks are put in place or the sidewalks are repaired, the trees are damaged. So there's my feeling would be is if you're not going to put in the tree wells, don't put in the trees. So on that particular part of it. I also think that because of the increase in traffic that's going down Stanley, this is independent of whether this is a city street or not, that in fact there's going to be more school vehicles going up and down the street right where a whole bunch of kids are. And to not put in a sidewalk here, I'm actually surprised that the school district isn't putting it in because you want a separation of uses here. It's one thing with the bus barn at one end of it. When you have the bridge coming across Branch where all the students are coming and going to the playgrounds and also going to school in the mornings, you really need some sort of a separation in uses here. So I'd like to see us require the sidewalk at least partway down Stanley to where we can make the connection at least to the bridge to where students would have the opportunity to be on a sidewalk and at some point cross Stanley to get over to the facilities on the other side. So I'm not sure we need curb and gutter and sidewalk all the way, but I do think we need some sort of sidewalk for the first, I'm going to say third of this, but at least down to the end of the basketball courts there where they can make the connection across to the bridge. So that would be my only two concerns here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, I have a couple of questions now based on the issues that the Mayor Pro Tem raised. First of all, let me ask the appellant, on the issue of separation and looking at pedestrian traffic, particularly student pedestrian traffic.
I think they do that 3 times a day. So we wanted to put speed bumps, whatever city recommendations would be, so we wouldn't have to come back and tear something out, do it to city standards, make provisions for student traffic, whether it be raised crosswalks, speed bumps, obviously signage, delineation, any type of visual. The speed tables, I think, are pretty effective. So,
okay. Thank you. Okay, I have to, beg ignorance of tree wells as relates to sidewalks. Is there an intent here to put in street trees now? Is that going to be part of the landscaping plan? Or are they going to come later? And if they come later, can the tree wells be put in place when the sidewalks are put in place?
We haven't seen the plan, so I think it's still up in the air. But I think it would be pretty easy that if street trees were a proposal and they're next to a sidewalk, we would definitely want to think about tree wells so that the trees will survive long term when a sidewalk does go in.
Okay. Well, then I think I would concur with Mayor Pro Tem's suggestion that there at least be an awareness in terms of the timing of sidewalk, street trees, street well, somehow or another, that has to be orchestrated so that so we don't have the encroachment of root systems and have the problems that we see, as he indicated, in many, many other parts of the city. So I think maybe if we work with staff on that aspect of it, the timing of sidewalks, tree wells, street trees, and make sure that that's orchestrated so that we accomplish what we're trying to do here. And that's minimize the root damage to a brand new sidewalk. A couple of things. First of all, I can't recall who mentioned it. I think Joe, maybe you did on the staff report, or was that you, Jim? Somebody mentioned the staff report.
Oh, I did.
Okay, yeah. It's your work, Jim, or whatever, but I really appreciate it. It's clear, it's concise, it's easy to get a hold of. So keep this format in mind, not just for your staff reports, but others as well. It's really nice to have the issue dissected this way and displayed this way. The other thing that I'm very pleased that staff adhered to was our system of review. And we tend to get in trouble sometimes when we pull away from the ARC and the Planning Commission and all of those other advisory bodies that we put in place and taken time and care to make sure that, you know, the proper review takes place. So to have that done unilaterally by one person, in my mind, just takes away the spirit and the intent of what we're attempting to do through the review process. So I'm very pleased that staff stood firm on that. I think with the, you know, with the comment on the tree wells and listening to your explanation, Kevin, about how you're going to work with the orchestration of potential pedestrian traffic of school children and the maintenance use itself, I'm comfortable with what staff is recommending here, and I can support it as well. So with that, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, before we move on, could I just ask one more question of the applicant? Kevin, you might be able to answer this. As I'm looking at attachment one, and we're talking, of course, about student access, it's obvious to me that, the main Paulding student access that comes into the PE, for their physical education, will come across this particular area, or I believe they still also come down this way?
That's correct, they can.
Uh-huh. And there'll be a fence here?
That's correct. There'll be a chain link fence dividing the O&M building from the west playfield.
And then a chain link all the way down here as well. So we have a nice division here between where the students would be doing their physical activity on both sides of this particular facility.
That's correct.
My question then is the DG path that's the 4-foot DG path that's going to be put in place. It looks like in this concept plan, is this the path here?
No, actually DG path we are considering across
county school facility.
That's correct.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one more question for you, Kevin.
Yeah, I have a question. This has to do with students coming to and leaving school. I understood the as far as getting to the PE field, but are students allowed to use the bridge when they come to and from school?
I don't think that any students come down Stanley back up over across the bridge. They always go up Crown Hill to access
through the five-way intersection instead of across the
bridge. Yeah, I haven't personally seen any students access the campus from the lower fields.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? If not, then we will entertain a motion on this.
Mr. Mayor, I'd make a motion that we adopt a resolution of the City Council and the City of Royal Grande upholding the appeal of the Planning Commission's approval, thereby approving conditional use permit 06002, but changing the conditions of approval consistent with the staff recommendations regarding the modified project and waiving the associated impact fees, and only the impact fees.
Okay. Is that your motion?
Yes, sir.
All right. And second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Just some very minor modifications or clarifications. The clerk has requested we add in the resolution title after the reference to the use permit number applied for by Lucia Moore Unified School District. The modification indicated by Ms. Florence deleting the reference in the general condition prologue to the three modular office buildings. That's page 6, the Public Works Department conditions. There's a reference to prior to recording of the map. It should be prior to issuance of a certificate of occupancy. And then I don't know whether there was consensus with regard to bonding on the drainage improvements, but I thought I'd just bring the issue up.
Well, I accept all the changes that you've mentioned, and I don't see the need to have the drainage bonded. I think that in good faith, the district's saying they're going to be complying with that fully, and it's conditioned for that, so I'm comfortable with that.
Did we want to I'm looking at condition 51, which states all drainage facilities should be designed to accommodate 100-year storm flow. It's not tied to any approval. Perhaps it would be satisfactory to add the words, and shall be installed prior to issuance of a certificate of occupancy. I don't know if that was the direction the council.
Right. Can I just clarify? I mean, I'm just wondering if the applicant's okay with that. That means that, I mean, you've already got the slab set up. Basically, they're saying you won't be able to occupy your building until the drainage improvements are installed, is what I'm hearing.
Designed.
I thought.
Or designed and planned for.
Relatively easy.
At this juncture, I think all of these things are related to each other. So there are a number of things that we would need to comply with prior to occupancy, and we assumed that the drainage aspects would be one of those. So I think that we concur with the language offered by the city attorney.
Okay. Then the second holds.
Okay. Okay, now we're certain about this. Okay. I want to see two right hands and, cross my heart. All right. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you.
Let's keep going.
Do one more, you want to take a break?
Let's take a break. This is a big one.
Okay. At this time, council is going to take a very, very brief 5 to 7 minute recess, and we will reconvene roughly at 12 till. Okay, council is back in session. And our next item is 9C, consideration of general plan amendment, case number 06.
Turns over the past 4 years, was primarily pulled together by Brian Soland, the last intern employed during 2006. It went through a discussion process at Traffic Commission, Parks and Recreation Commission, Planning Commission, including a field trip on April 24th. It is coming to you with recommendations for approval from the Planning Commission. There are some specific policy changes, a limited number, which are outlined in your staff report and in the resolution attached to the staff report. There were some late distributions of maps. I'd like to give you a quick overview of the bike plan in particular, which is what this PowerPoint will quickly do. The purpose of the bike plan is to establish policies for bicycle facilities, identify existing bikeway network, recommend future bikeway network, prioritize projects for funding, and this is an important aspect and was a consent item earlier on your agenda, gain eligibility for certain funding sources, particularly the Caltrans Bike Transportation Act funds. This is the key piece of the bike plan, which is the current and proposed bike network within the city. The solid lines typically depict where the community perceives bike lanes to exist. Some of them are actual bike lanes, others are just striped shoulders. But the intent is to create conforming to state standard bike lanes along the collector and arterial routes, and several local streets have special recognition as well. There are some cross sections and then 10 top priorities listed on this graphic. I'll show you the 10 projects that are recommended within the bike plan. These were altered over the hearing process and reflect the Planning Commission's recommendation on August 1st. The first priority is East Grand Avenue. There's currently bike lanes on the segment between Oak Park and Elm. This would extend through to Highway 101. Priority two is James Way from Oak Park Boulevard to Tally Ho. The entire 2 mile length is West Branch Street. Most of the street is already striped with bike lanes or shoulders. There is one segment between Vernon and Grand Avenue which lacks sidewalks as well as bike lanes. Priority five is Traffic Way from Branch Street to Highway 101. Priority six is Rancho Parkway and Camino Mercado. The street width is adequate with restricted parking for both two-way left turn and bike lane treatment along most segments. Oak Park Boulevard from Grand Avenue up to the city limits is generally capable of accommodating bike lanes. There's a segment between West Branch Street and north of James Way where the divided median raised landscape median exists that the street is insufficient width. That portion would be signed as a bike route. Farrell Avenue from basically Oak Park to Halcyon generally is an extension of a route that exists in Grover Beach, and that would become a Class 2 bike lanes on both sides. There may be some exceptions due to on-street parking that would have to be signed as a route. There is a specific category that is suggested in the bike plan for a treatment called a bike boulevard. This would not necessarily require bike lanes to be striped on the street, but special signage and encouraging more of the family recreational connection traffic between Newport and Ash and along Ash in front of Soto Sports Complex and to Elm Street Park is suggested for bike boulevard treatment. And finally, priority 10 is Briscoe Road, scheduled for some reconstruction. It, too, is inadequate in width, curb-to-curb, to accommodate both on-street parking and bike lanes, so it is suggested as a bike route. The pedestrian enhancement plan, which is a separate chapter dealing primarily with sidewalks, identifies 20 specific areas that are primarily routes to and from schools connecting to parks and community activity areas. And these are identified on this particular graphic. These are not the only sidewalk deficiencies. There are some areas that are also outlined in the general plan. These would be amended to eliminate some of the trails and paths which currently traverse agricultural areas. There was an implied trail system along all waterways, including through the middle of agricultural areas and in sensitive habitat areas where they're highly impractical. Most of those pathways have been deleted from the circulation map and the parks and recreation element maps. The intent of the maps is to have the bike priorities that are outlined in the bike plan reflected on both maps. This map has some gold lines which have not been properly overlaid in the circulation map that was distributed yesterday. The two maps will be consistent in the bike routes and lanes that are shown on both maps in its final analysis and attached as exhibits A2 and A3 to the resolution. And again, the policies that are changed are specifically referenced in the staff report. If you have questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Questions for Rob? Councilmember Costello and then Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Rob, in looking at the priorities, as we go back through them, get them back in front of me. If I read this correctly, priority one calls for the removal of parking on both sides from Halcyon to Highway 101. And I guess the question I have is, what effect do we have on the neighborhood if we remove the parking from this area and indeed some several of the other areas?
Priority one, as applied for in the bike transportation account grant, would deal only with the segment that has 100-foot right-of-way, 80-foot curb-to-curb between Elm and Halcyon. There is a potential proposal that Public Works is working on that would introduce a, so the segment would be treated as a bike route. We would sign so traffic would know to use Grand Avenue to make the east-west connection from the village towards Grover Beach using Grand Avenue. That's the only through route. And the segment between Halcyon and Highway 101 would be a route. From that point on, it would be a Class 2 lanes.
Okay. Well, I guess I've got a dilemma here. I really want to encourage and support expanding the bicycle lanes, routes we've got. But some of the priorities that I saw here called for removal of parking from a lot of streets. And I'm not sure that all of the areas can support that, nor could I. So it sounds to me like you're saying that we're not calling for the removal of all the parking that is called for in the priorities.
That's true. In the bike plan itself, there is a discussion of the constraints, and it will be a balancing act that would be up to the City Council on a project-by-project basis to make that decision. At this time, there are no projects other than the two that were identified in the consent agenda, the segment of Grand Avenue between Elm and Halcyon, where lanes can be added to the street without any loss of parking, or the two-way left turn median, and the segment of James Way and Tally Ho, which would be bike lanes on James Way and bike route on Tally Ho.
Okay, and then I guess maybe the next question, I can skip several of these others because it dealt with the same issue there in the parking. However, on priority six, Rancho Parkway, Camino Mercado, calling for class two lanes, I just wonder, when this was drafted or constructed, whatever, or came through the process, how does this tie into some of the traffic improvements that we're looking for down line here in the completion of phases one and phase two of five cities?
The Public Works Department, Community Development Department will generate with the PAD-I proposal some restriping plans along both Camino Mercado and Rancho Parkway. There's also concerns about speed of traffic, because there is generally no on-street parking, so it's a relatively wide curb-to-curb with nothing more than a center line, and the traffic tends to increase in speed rather than decrease. We are talking about providing left-turn pockets or two-way left-turn lanes where there are multiple driveways or intersections. We're talking...
Rob, just for clarification purposes, as I looked at the two maps that came in, I believe yesterday, the circulation element general plan map and specifically the parks and rec element map, are you saying that and then comparing those to the specifically the Arroyo Grande bicycle network and the proposed class 1, 2, and 3s, are these not consistent right now? Is that 'cause I'm seeing some inconsistencies between the two, and you're saying that the Parks and Rec element will be updated to reflect the map, the purple one that we're seeing here?
Yes. Okay. There are essentially two reference maps that are contained in the general plan, and the primary change was to delete the path trail system that extended through the agricultural areas and along the creek system, which were determined to be inappropriate or infeasible. We left segments of those paths where they are either in existence or appropriate based upon current plans and feasibility. The areas where we intended to add were the bike plan routes and lanes. The paths and trails should still be reflected. They could be a potential Class 1 bikeway as well as a pedestrian habitat trail, as an example. Bottom line is the maps, even the two maps, A2 and A3, that were distributed, aren't consistent. There needs to be the addition of the gold lines that are on the park and recreation map reflected on the circulation map as well. And any links that are shown on the bike plan that were not a part of that priority routing system should be added to both of those maps. So we'll correct those graphics and integrate them into the plan.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have some questions?
I guess I'm still a little confused by that explanation.
So what's Exhibit A3 will, in fact, reflect all of the bicycle lanes that are in the bicycle network plan, the bicycle circulation plan will actually...
Yes.
So the bicycle circulation plan won't be part of the general plan. It's just a policy, so to speak.
It is a document that goes beyond a policy document. It describes the conditions and the concerns and the determinations that will have to be made in the future, such as...
Specifically has to do where Sunset comes out onto Elm. It's a particularly difficult corner already, and...
There are a number of bike lane and route proposals that are a part of the bike plan that may be very low priority or relatively low priority because they might parallel streets that could function more as bike commuting routes or bike travel routes. One of the concerns about streets such as Grand Avenue is it's not comfortable for many bike riders. So one thought is to try and create a neighborhood network of local streets that could be used by bikers. If there's sufficient traffic to warrant special treatment, whether it's lanes or signs or bike boulevards, then those are discussed within the bike plan but aren't necessarily committed to as a part of the circulation network. The principal issue is to try and make sure that all of the collector and arterial streets and the essential local streets that would connect those for bike travel are shown on the general plan, the A2 and A3 graphics. So it's very difficult to go beyond the top 10 priorities that are depicted on the plan and include all of the possible routes.
Understood. All right. Thanks.
Rob, I had a question. Looking at some of the support material in the packet, and I'm referring to the bicycle plan. You know, one of the questions that I had before I found this letter was whether or not the Slo County Bike Coalition had a chance to chime in on this, and that apparently they have, according to the email that I have in the packet. Is that correct?
Yes, they have. They've inputted comments. Not all of their comments have been committed to by the city in terms of how we would treat bicycle enforcement and issuance of citations versus bicycle training alternatives. All of those suggestions that are involving potential city enforcement would be brought back to the council for clarification and implementation without the bike plan being any more than just a directional document.
Well, Adam Fukushima raises some put it into some subsequent action that comes back to us. Is that correct?
That is correct. We received this. This was part of the Planning Commission's consideration. They support the idea of a school rather than punitive fines or enforcement penalties as at least an initial method of a more proactive bike enforcement.
Okay. The other comment that he made, that he made here had to do with proposing a bike lane at Arroyo Grande High School on Fair Oaks. You know, it's sort of trite, I guess, but I'm looking at your map, and I think what I'm seeing is that, if I'm reading this right, that there's an existing bike lane between Arroyo Grande High School and along Fair Oaks all the way to Halcyon. Is that correct? Did that happen recently, or was it always there?
The existing treatment of the Fair Oaks in front of the high school lacks bike lanes. There is no bike lane along Fair Oaks, and the curb width on one side and the lack of curbs adjacent to the agricultural field provide a shoulder stripe, which is often interpreted as a bike lane on the north side of the street. There is no such shoulder definition on the south side of the street.
Am I reading the legend right? It's showing a solid yellow line, which says existing bike lane.
There is an existing bike lane within the segment of Fair Oaks from Halcyon to Valley Road.
Right. That's not what I'm talking about.
That's a gold one, then we have a purple one
from
Valley Road.
Yeah, he was talking about from the high school to along Fair Oaks.
To the high school from Traffic Way?
No, it's not that specific.
Well, the problem is there is not sufficient pavement width in front of the high school to accommodate it. That, again, is shown as a bike route. It is signed as a bike route, so a person who is on Traffic Way and wants to get across town can find the high school using a bike.
It's part of our master plan in regards to what we can do in the future and the possibilities, and I think that that's really what this is all about. And then, of course, the documents that staff has produced in conjunction with the general plan amendments are, kind of talk about the constraints and prioritize the areas in which we can maybe request funding. I think this is all appropriate. I think that there may be and will be concerns specific to some of these as they come before us as project specific, and at that time we're gonna need to grapple with the balance between appropriate areas for bicycle transportation, and in conjunction with, of course, our traffic circulation and parking. So we have the discretion to do that in the future, but I believe this lays out a nice roadmap, in a sense, to what we can be looking at, and provides the tools necessary to go after the grant funding that's there. So I think staff's done a great job in providing for this information. It sounds like we're going to be amending our general plan maps to be consistent with our network maps that have been produced here. So that, to me, I think is really what we should be striving for. So with all that, I don't have any problems with moving forward with adopting this amendment and the material before us.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
I can only echo the comments that Councilmember Dickens has made regarding this. I think that it's very appropriate that we do update the bike plan. I'm very, very pleased to see the sidewalk and pedestrian enhancement plan also included in this. I know there's a number of neighborhoods around the community that definitely need to have the sidewalks improved. I'm glad to see that that's going to be addressed. My one concern was with some of the parking issues on a number of the priorities. but I feel comfortable with the fact that those will come before us on an individual basis, and we'll weigh them carefully when they come. I think it's important that we get this approved so that we can apply for some of the grants that are out there, and I think it's a good thing to do, and I can support going forward with this tonight.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, I, too, am glad to see this coming forward. I do have a couple of specific changes that are connecting at Fair Oaks, and at least consider eliminating the lanes on Farrell between Halcyon and Elm. And the reason I say that is, you have this dropping these bicycles off at what's a relatively dangerous corner. Anybody who's ridden this any amount of time will quickly go down Alder to Fair Oaks and use the light anyway. But we would have a linear connection across town through Fair Oaks to Elm to Farrell, all the way east to west, all the way through town, which would make a lot more sense than breaking it up here. And we have two parallel routes very close to each other. So I think that might be, and it happens to be driven by, we're going to be repaving Farrell, so the decision on that will actually have to be made relatively quickly compared to a lot of these other decisions. The other, and this is something of a question, I went out and looked for this, the bicycle route that showed off Branch Mill. There's a road there that says no trespassing on. I'm guessing there's some sort of easement there or something that I guess goes up to the water tower. Is there really a bike route there, or is that the green?
The green path was depicted on the original general plan map in 2001. It's Huebner Lane and then a potential cross connection through Arroyo Linda Crossroads. It's a steep access road that is principally access to the water tank. There is no connection across the current property. So it's showing up as a long-term future a trail path.
So the part that's solid green really shouldn't be dotted green, because actually right now it's a no trespassing road.
True.
So, okay. True. I just so I didn't miss something out there. Okay. I don't have too much trouble with the priorities either, particularly the first five or so. I do think Briscoe's a very difficult road to use even when it gets wider. Again, I ride this quite a bit. There's a lot better ways to get around this, but I don't think we'll ever get a bike path through the cemetery, but that's certainly the way to do this. The concern I have with the priorities is that we don't have priorities in the pedestrian area, and I think bang for the buck in the pedestrian enhancement area. I understand they're all somewhat driven by grant funding, that we're, whatever we get grants. But I do think that given some of the really, really difficult pedestrian areas we have, and I'm particularly thinking of Paulding, I'm also thinking of the park, Strether Park out on the north end of town, we've actually had a group of people come forward, that I'd like to see us prioritize a couple of areas that certainly we're looking for funding, but whether we got funding or not, we'd be. And finally, I think that we talk about a road diet on Elm Street, that might be a future deal, but I do think looking at particularly the intersection of Elm Street and Farrell here, this is a route to school for both North Oceano and Harlow going in opposite directions. And there's actually no crosswalk here at all. So I think as part of the development of Farrell, we should look at whatever pedestrian enhancements we can do there when we're in fact doing that road improvement. At the very least doing the striping, but at least doing finishing the sidewalk on at least one side of the street there to ensure a safe route to Harlow, whether we're able to get – sidewalks are relatively cheap, and whether we're able to get funding for it or not, I really think we should be prioritizing those projects.
I'd like to add briefly that at least some of the Planning Commission felt that sidewalk priorities were more critical than the bike lanes and routes because of the extent of pedestrian traffic that occurs. We will be returning on December 12th with a Safe Routes to School item for an application with the bike and pedestrian plan. We'll focus on both the Elm and Farrell location that you've mentioned and the Paulding School vicinity with sidewalk proposals for Safe Routes to School. Those are due in January, and this will be, I think, a new proposal for top priority implementation.
Okay. Well, the reason I chose Strether Park there is, one, is it's not a route to school, and so it's certainly something we're going to have to look at. We have had citizen comment on it already, but it also kind of has a dual effect there. Almost anything that enhances the pedestrian safety is going to be a traffic calming measure along another area that's been a complaint about speeding for quite a while. I know Public Works put together an idea, I don't know how old this is, I think it's probably a year or so ago, based on back in August of 2005, I guess not quite a year, and that's kind of as far as it got, but I do think that's one area in particular that we want to take a strong look at as far as improving access to that park, because all the residents are on one side of a busy road and the park's on the opposite. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens, did you have a comment?
I just had one quick comment that I know. Mic's not on. I just had one quick comment that might be helpful in maybe some grant acquisition. Is that I don't see a Coastal Christian School labeled on here off of Farrell. And if we are looking to connect schools to
grant acquisition as relates to the whole area of developing our bicycle network. And when you make the application, is it on a project-by-project basis? In other words, do you have to lay out in detail each of the descriptor templates that you have listed as priorities?
Yes. And its focus is primarily bike commuting.
Okay. All right, so if we were to, let's say, in other words, if we were to, say, tier a group of projects and go after grant funding for a group of projects, is there a way in which, once we got into the process, if we ran into some challenges, whatever they might be, EIR, right-of-way, easements, whatever, roadway widths, additional expenses that take us beyond the scope of what the grant would cover. Would there be a way, since we got approval, would there be a way of shifting that to another related project nearby within that tier or within that grouping? That's my question. Is there a way of saying, okay, priority one projects, and then list a half a dozen or so?
The two applications that are authorized as a part of the consent agenda are lanes on Grand Avenue between Elm and Halcyon, which is a restriping project, and it's $30,000. You have to provide a 10% matching for a maximum 90% Bike Transportation Act funding. That's the proposal. If they underfund it and we still want to do it, we could certainly alter the project description if we found infeasibility for some reason. If we had identified lanes, as an example, on Grand Avenue and then found a block or two deficient to actually meet safe standards and decided it should be signed as a route, we could make that proposal to the state, and I think that they would still fund all of the bike account expenditures.
Graham, from time to time, a project will stall or a project will cancel after the money has been allocated. And so there's sometimes an opportunity to reprogram that money instead of giving it back, which we don't want to do. So I guess, is there a way of structuring the priorities that you have listed here that might give us that kind of latitude? That's all I'm asking.
I think the answer is yes, with Caltrans controlling the purse string.
Okay. The other quick question I have is, obviously, this is in draft form right now, so some of the recommendations and suggestions that the Mayor Pro Tem made, since he traverses our city on two wheels from time to time and has firsthand knowledge, there's an ability or an opportunity to incorporate, fine-tune some of these before it comes back to us.
Yes, the intent of referencing the bike plan is not to cast it as an element of the general plan. It's a guidance document, a discussion document. So if we get into specifics and we find a street that is infeasible, inappropriate, unsafe, or unnecessary, we can certainly take it off of the plan as it's currently depicted without it being a general plan amendment. I think our intent is to prioritize those projects and return with implementation proposals. It's a guidance document.
Let me ask a question, one last question then, in terms of grant eligibility. And it could very well be in here someplace, and I didn't see it, but is it a requirement for grant eligibility that a pedestrian plan and a bike plan become supplemental documents or incorporated in some way in a general plan, or can they be standalone approved documents?
The bike plan is not always an integral part of a general plan, and our general plan is primarily a policy document. So the maps and descriptions and some of the proposals that are a part of the bike plan are not considered to find an alternative route or to create a different solution. We would need to clarify what the plan is and make that a part of the bike plan. And we can amend the bike plan frequently. It doesn't, in fact, you must have a recently adopted bike plan to request transportation funds from the bike account within 4 years. So instead of every 10 years amending the general plan, we might be back looking at next year's bike applications or safe routes to school applications and say, this is what we want to do and it should be added to the plan or deleted from the plan.
Okay, so if I understand you, downline modifications to these two documents won't require us unwrapping the general plan.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. With all of that, I can support these two documents. I'm very pleased that we're finally here with it. I know a lot of staff work went into it, Rob, so good work. If there's nothing else, then I will entertain a motion on 9C.
I'll move a resolution of the City Council approving General Plan Amendment Case Number 06-002 to adopt the bike and sidewalk pedestrian enhancement plans and amend the 2001 General Plan Circulation, Transportation, Parks, and Recreation element as indicated by the City of Arroyo Grande.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Aye.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this takes us to 9D, consideration of a resolution ordering formation of the Grace Lane Assessment District, confirming assessments, district diagram, and approving the levying of assessments. You've got the lead, Tim.
Unfortunately, I do. Mayor Ferrara, members of the council, the conditions of approval for the Grace Lane declaring an intention to form the district. Vista Robla LLC is prepared and the council has considered and approved the required engineer's report, which describes and establishes the formula utilized, assessment amounts for each benefiting unit, as well as the total assessment within the proposed assessment district. Pursuant to Government Code Section 53753, the city served the required 45-day notice and provided the owner with an assessment ballot to support or oppose formation of the district prior to council consideration of formation of the district. This preserves the owner's absolute right to prevent district formation. The city received the assessment ballot with an affirmative vote, which was determinative for formation of the district. As of this date, the owner's affirmative vote for formation has not been changed. The owner has the absolute right to change his affirmative vote through the close of the public hearing for this item. The final step in this process is the Council's consideration of a resolution ordering formation of the Graceland Assessment District, confirming assessments, district diagram, and approving the levying of assessments. I'd be glad to answer any questions, and the applicant is here.
Questions for Tim? Okay, we have no questions as of yet. And this is a public hearing, and we typically allow the applicant an opportunity to come forward if he so desires.
Good evening, Greg Nestor, managing member of the Vista Roble LLC, or only member, I guess I should say. I really have anything to add beyond Tim's presentation, and just here to answer any questions if I can be helpful.
Okay. Thank you. Any other members of the public? I'm not seeing any, so we will close the public hearing portion of 9D. Who started off the last one? Okay, then you can go first, Joe.
Mr. Mayor, I have no problem supporting this tonight. I think we're just tying up the loose ends and completing the process here to get this moving forward. And I will support the resolution ordering the formation of the assessment district.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Dickens.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I concur with my colleague to the right here.
All right, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with this either. We can move forward.
Thank you. I have no issue with this as well, and I'll entertain a motion on.
Mr. Mayor, I move we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Royal Grande ordering the formation of the Grace Lane Assessment District, confirming the assessments.
Okay, that takes us to item 10, continued business. We do have an item 10A, consideration of adoption of the five-year radar speed survey for West Branch Street and East Grand Avenue and Olahan Alley. You're up, Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council members. Back in July of this year, we presented the five-year radar survey to the Council for consideration, and at that time the Council had some further direction to look at West Branch, East Grand, and Olahan Alley. And this evening we're returning with that information for your consideration. I'm going to turn it over to Mike Lynn, our Assistant City Engineer. He's been deeply involved in the survey, and he's going to present our findings.
Good evening. I think that Don said that very well, what the general purpose of it is that we see on the map. We have Rancho Parkway, West Branch Street, Olahan Alley, and East Grand Avenue. So we'll just start from the top. East Grand Avenue from Halcyon to Oak Park. Council's concerns on July 11th were heavy recreational vehicle traffic trying to access the beach. Coordination of the speed limit for consistency between Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, and safety considerations at the crosswalks. The police department did have several conversations with Grover Beach, and what they determined was that the two roads were materially different. Arroyo Grande has large stretches of uninterrupted roadway, and as soon as you get into the Grover Beach segment, there are two large concrete planters with palm trees that are approximately 18 inches high that narrow the roadway. And then immediately after that, every intersection is signalized almost all the way to the beach. So they're really two different roadways. So after further conversations, I forgot about the crosswalks. It's not the practice of us to put in mid-block crosswalks. That's actually under the policy of the police department. But the crosswalk as it stands at 35 miles an hour or 40 miles an hour, the viewing distances are the same in terms of being able to see the cross traffic, and we feel that it poses no more risk than it did previously for those crosswalks. We have talked about putting the in-pavement lights and going for grants for those particular segments. So staff's recommendation...
With you, the character of Grand, East Grand as opposed to West Grand is a little bit different for the reasons that you indicate, but there's also another characteristic that's different that was on my mind when you know, we asked you to go back to the drawing board on this, and that is the fact that if you look at those stretches in Grover Beach, you don't have large, high volume, intensity of use centers, with the exception of the Vons, that actually have ingress and egress out onto Grand Avenue, and trying to negotiate a center turn lane in both directions. We do have that characteristic frequently along East Grand. And, you know, to be honest with you, I thought about this particular study just recently after my own experience of several near misses of people trying to exit shopping centers that we have on East Grand in our city to negotiate that center lane so that they could wait for the traffic to clear and pull out. So, you know, I don't see that listed up there as some of our concerns, but it is in fact the cross traffic that was an issue for me. If you know, and we can go up and down this, you know, the street. It's, you know, it can be the cookie crock, it can be the you know, you name it. And we have several fairly high intensity of use centers along Grand Avenue where that ingress and egress becomes an issue. I'm not seeing that up there, so I don't know if you consider that or not.
You know, I think it's you know, it's certainly a concern when people are pulling out into that center turn lane to find a safe haven to finally get out into the travel lanes. I don't think that the survey that we did specifically accounted for ingress and egress, and I don't know that it accounts for that in when we do our engineering study. Although, just because it's not in the Caltrans manual doesn't mean we can't. But
let me narrow it down for you, Don. What I'm seeing happening is that because of the width of the street, because we have these centers up and down East Grand Avenue, mm-hmm. I think, and is going faster, and that, you know, people get frustrated waiting. And they'll try and jump out. And at the higher speeds, you know, you've got to hit the brakes mm-hmm. and hit them hard sometimes to avoid, you know, a collision with someone who's trying to negotiate that first bite.
Right.
And so, you know, I guess that has always been my major concern, much more so than the other things that you have up there.
And I think the only thing that I can say about that at this point is that when we did the testing, when we went out there and used our radar gun to see what the traffic is doing, this is what they're doing now. They are doing 40 miles an hour now. And that's, you know, that's why when we look at the 85th percentile of what's going on today, that is what they're doing. And that is why, you know, we're recommending that the speed limit be raised, because that follows the guidelines that we've been given through Caltrans. So I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure they were raising it any more than they're driving now.
So, I agree with you. They're going 40, 45, 50. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is that what you're creating is a series of near misses. I don't know what the accident or collision rate is out there, but I would not be surprised, you know, if you jack up another 5 miles an hour, they're going to go another 15 miles an hour faster because they're going 10 over the limit now.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. The traffic is moving through there very rapidly, and I would not dispute the 85th percentile. All I'm saying is that what that does is contribute to an unsafe condition that already exists.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how we reconcile that. But, I'm just – on this one, I'm speaking from experience, and it's sometimes very tough to get out of those access driveways with that kind of traffic at that mm-hmm. speed.
Especially with four lanes of traffic, you have to negotiate.
Exactly.
I would agree.
You have to get out and stop at the same time. You have to get out, make the left turn, and stop so that you can wait for your chance to get in the other. Can't call in the suicide lane for nothing.
Yeah.
Right, and actually the more modern ways of making those entrances, the commercial entrance, we wouldn't put in that same kind of entrance now for something like the Vons. And the newer facilities like Long's and other ones that we've built or have allowed to be constructed do have the wider rate intent of the speed survey, and I believe that's what the traffic commissioner actually looks at when he's evaluating this.
Well, I understand that, Mike. Yes. You know, we've been down this road before, no pun intended. But, you know, the issue for me has always been that the traffic commissioner does not look at the other circumstances, only the 85th percentile from an enforcement standpoint. And that's not – that does not always serve us best. So, anyhow, my two cents on that. I'm sorry. Go ahead with your your presentation.
Okay, West Branch Street. Concerns expressed by council were the segment between Briscoe Road and Rancho Parkway, saying that it was highly congested, and that's very well documented, the problems we've had with the Briscoe Road intersection and the Caltrans tie-in. The original recommendation we had was from Vernon Street, which is just south of the Women's Center, all the way up to Rancho Parkway. And the reason that we made that recommendation was that it was just a natural place to cut off, just a natural intersection. After you brought up your concerns about the steep road grade between Rancho Parkway and Briscoe Road and the limited spacing between the two signals, we did reconsider and decided to make the break at Briscoe Road and changed our recommendation to raising the speed limit from Vernon Street to Briscoe Road and leaving that segment untouched. So therefore, that's what was supported by the speed survey information, was raising it from 40 miles per hour to 45 miles per hour. And then Old Han Alley, this was not part of the July 11th meeting, but we've had a number of concerns about the alley. We've done some research, and it depends on interpretations, but it does appear to qualify as an alley in accordance with California Vehicle Code Section 110. But the city does have the right, and I don't have it referenced on the PowerPoint, but California Vehicle Code 22358.3 actually allows the city, based on the width of a roadway, to set the speed limit at a lower speed than the prima facie speed of 25 miles per hour to the next level, which is 15 miles per hour, if they determine that there are conditions that warrant it being lowered, which are obviously the narrow roadway. We also have in this particular area, we have a lot of parking for the businesses, and we have a creekside park that we built several years ago that is well attended by the public. Station or signage first, and then revisit it at a later date. And so taking upon that, we did check out the super elevation of the roadway and the tie-ins, the sight lines, and we determined that since it was built to arterial road standards, everything did comply with the Caltrans recommendations, the design guidelines. So then we went through and tried to develop striping reconfigurations, which actually ties in with Rob, with Community Development Director Rob's recommendations. It actually was priority 6 for Rancho Parkway. And we added, let's jump to the next slide, the existing condition you see above. The travel lanes existing now are 18 feet in the southbound lane and 22 feet in the northbound lane. And there is a 5-foot lane, which doesn't appear to be a bike lane or anything else. It's more of a fog line at the moment. But the way we would change it is to put in center turn pockets. They're not, it's not actually a center turn lane, but center turn pockets at the major intersections. Narrow the travel lanes in each direction to 12 feet, and then put a 5-foot bike lane on each side so there'd be no parking. We believe we could implement these recommendations and then return several months afterward and do a radar speed survey and return to council at that time to see if there was any effect in calming traffic. Okay, yeah, here we go. This is a conceptual plan. This particular one is Rancho Parkway from Comida Mercado to the left, and the next intersection is Palos Secos. You can see we do have a turnpike and then there with a stacking distance of about 3 cars. If we proceed to the next section, you'll see we have a painted island. We go back to a slightly wider roadway for Rancho Parkway till we get to the next major intersection, which is Via Poca. Again, we have a left turn lane with stacking distance for three cars. And we proceed on to Rancho Parkway. To James Way.
What is that? What treatment do you have? Is this anything down? This is James Way here, right?
That's correct.
I can't see this very clearly. What is this? Anything?
Oh, those are the existing turn pockets that are there now.
Okay.
There's a right turn lane going on southbound James Way and a dedicated left turn lane for northbound James Way.
To improve the flow between phases 1 and 2 and to adapt to whatever changes are coming with build out of Pad I?
Those improvements went up to Via Vaquero. And so we're taking it from basically the Via Vaquero Camino Mercado intersection and taking that further to the north. So,
but we do incorporate between Camino Mercado and Branch, we incorporate some of the changes we were talking about?
Yes, I think the bike lanes are going to continue all the way down.
And the pockets we were talking about, it seemed to me we were talking about maybe some sort of turn pockets coming up out of Five City Center.
We did.
Those are independent of this.
Yes, but they're pockets as well.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Don, my questions revolve around the Olahan Alley concept, and if I heard your staff report correctly, it sounds like it's already posted at 5 miles an hour, because I guess I've never even noticed that. And we have classified it as a what? What is it back there? I mean, is an alley? Is it a, you know, obviously that's the name of it, but it's a type of road. Because I was looking at it, I guess what I'm looking at a parking lot. And my concern is this, is if we move forward and we add a speed limit of 15 miles an hour, does that mean that now we need to do a radar verification periodically? Or why do we need a speed limit back there to begin with?
Well, this was a concern of some of the Village Improvement Association members, but more importantly, it was a concern of the police department. They are now enforcing more regularly back in the alley area. There are students back there that they're back there more often. They asked the question of how this became. Of why it was posted that and how they could enforce it better. And so we researched it, and we could not find anywhere where the 5-mile-an-hour limit was established. But in order to comply with the vehicle code, then we have to establish a criteria for that street. Now, it varies in width. The drive alley varies in width, but there are other circumstances under section 22358.3 of the vehicle code that says that we can, same thing with the alleys.
Well, let me ask you this: if we were just to classify it as a parking lot, could we not? Could our police department enforce it instead of as a speed limit violation as reckless driving, regardless of whether it's 5, 10, you know? I guess from a code enforcement issue, is there a way of enforcing speed and other reckless driving if it weren't considered a road?
Well, I think they can certainly look at reckless driving in anywhere, wherever there is a car. I don't know that in a parking lot is the most appropriate thing, but the only specific defined way of doing this is what we found is that to have an established speed limit and that they can enforce that speed limit. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we've taken this particular course and being supported by the code here. So I think that's our approach.
Okay. Well, and that's fine as long as it can be enforced back there. And when we talk about Olahan Alley in regards to the 15-mile-an-hour, are we talking about from Mason Street to Bridge Street?
That's correct.
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I had one last question, Don, on or Mike. On West Branch, Vernon to Rancho Parkway, the 85th percentile is 44 miles an hour. And based on your presentation, you agreed that because of the circumstances that speed along Branch from Briscoe to Rancho Parkway would remain at 40. Is that correct? But when you look at council concerns, the segment of West Branch between Briscoe and Rancho Parkway, high levels of vehicular congestion, the grade of the roadway is steep, and there's limited spacing between two signalized intersections. So that's the justification, right, for leaving it at 40. Mm-hmm. But then we go to the last sentence there under council concerns. It says, there is also a lack of sidewalks between Briscoe Road and Vernon Street. The street isn't being addressed. Well, the only thing we're looking at is 44 miles an hour. So raise it to 45. You know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but, I mean, just what you said a minute ago, Don, about Olihan Alley and, you know, the fact that, you know, hey, there's other circumstances here that we can consider. You know, why can't we apply the same standard to some of our other roadways where there are extenuating circumstances? I mean, am I led to believe that if someone goes and sits down with a traffic commissioner and said, look, we're leaving it at 40 because there's a lot of pedestrian traffic out there and there are no sidewalks, and there are some pretty hazardous areas right around in there, that they're going to just turn their back and say, sorry, you can't write tickets? I mean, is that what it's come down to?
Well, I certainly don't know what they would say, and I think someone from the PD who knows the situation a little bit better with how they react when you get into court and you're standing there with in front of the commissioner presenting your side of the situation and why you're enforcing it in a certain way. Certainly he looks at the radar survey, and there's a space down there for extenuating circumstances or other unforeseen roadway elements. That is pretty much what they look at, and pedestrian volume is certainly an issue. I'm not sure that the pedestrian volume on the side of the road is as important as the pedestrian volumes crossing the road. But I certainly think that we certainly can ask the commissioner if that is a extenuating circumstance that he would, look at or be conscious of.
Well, I can tell you that, that there are periods of time where there are pedestrian traffic. There is pedestrian traffic, mm-hmm, both along the roadside and crossing the road. You've got the South County Center there. You got the library.
Mm-hmm.
Between what we're trying to do with a speed survey here in our city and the so-called position or posture of the traffic commissioner. I don't know who this person is. I don't know if it's possible for us to sit down and talk to this person, or if they remain diffused and apart from all of this and simply go by what's presented to them.
We've had discussions with him before. The police chief has had discussions with him and very informative discussions at times, and it's been very helpful. So I think we can maybe probably try to attempt to do that again.
Well, particularly on the Grand Avenue issue and particularly on this issue, I still have a level of discomfort with it, and I'm wondering if that's an option. If we have the option of at least sitting down and clarifying what he considers to be contributing circumstances that might allow him to withdraw a little bit from his position on a speed survey and consider some of these other factors.
I think that he would. I think that he'd want to have them quantified in some way and make that part of the engineering part of the survey. And I'm not sure how to go about that, but I think we can probably take a look at that to see if we can do that. Especially the pedestrian part of it, I think, and trying to quantify, traffic volumes in and out of the shopping centers and maybe use that as a percentage against what the actual traffic is in the roadway. So maybe that's some of the things that we can look at.
Well, put a driveway counter on some of the high traffic areas along Grand Avenue, especially on the weekends. Okay. Anything else? All right. I'll offer it. I don't see any public. Sorry about that, Bob, but you're not considered general public. But for the record, we typically allow people, even on non-public or on non-public hearings, to comment. We'll bypass that and have some final comments from the council. And Councilmember Dickens, why don't you go forward on 10A?
Well, I would concur with the mayor's comments and concerns. They were some of my concerns as well, Commissioner, on that. And then same thing on East Grand Avenue. If indeed there is something that we could do there, I still believe there's consistency that needs to happen between Grover Beach and with us in regards to their speed limits. And I don't think we want to be putting up palm trees to lower ours. But we certainly need to look at the existing situation with the high volume of commercial use along that segment. Those are the two issues that I have. I think staff helped me understand the Olihan Alley thing a lot better, so that I'm okay with that. And I concur with staff's recommendation on Rancho Parkway. So I don't know what we want to do as far as a motion this evening, but I would like to maybe direct staff to go back with both the East Grand Avenue and the West Branch segment of Vernon and Rancho Parkway and get some additional clarification before we adopt the recommendations presented this evening.
Let me ask a question. Feel free to chime in, whoever wants to, but... Rather than send the whole thing back, can we approve what we like, what we think is appropriate, and maybe just hold the others sort of aside until we can get some resolution on those?
Yeah, I think we'd be asking the council to do that. That would be great if we could do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Councilmember Costello.
I'd have to agree. This is actually my first look at this. I was on vacation when it first came to us in July. I agree that the East Grand situation is probably an unsafe situation to raise to 45. People are traveling above the speed limit now. If we raise the speed limit, they're going to take license to travel above that speed limit, and it's going to decrease those windows that are available for people to come out and make lefts. And it's not just the big centers that are involved there. I know that there's a lot of traffic going in and out of Washington Mutual. That has to cross left and cross traffic there, too. That's significant also. And that's counter to the people that are coming out of the Cookie Crock. So it creates a left turn conflict sometimes even. So I would think that that's something we really want to see if we can keep at the speed limit that's set now. Also over on West Branch Street, stretch of branch that's very narrow with very limited parking and no sidewalks, and I think the natural tendency might be to continue the 40 miles an hour even after you come out of that stop sign. I don't have any particular problems with the proposed recommendations for Rancho Parkway. I think those make a certain amount of sense, and also putting the limit 15 on Olihan Alley is probably a good thing, and with some police presence back there, that'll probably be a safe thing, too.
But I would recommend that we hold off on East Grand and on West Branch.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Just clarification, are you actually looking for approval of the striping tonight? I didn't see that. So is there a separate resolution for that? Or is that in that same resolution? Okay.
There's no resolution necessary for the striping.
Just a recommendation to move forward.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I would agree. I think it's worth at least a try to talk to the traffic commissioner about what would be the reasons that that may be possible, particularly on East Grand. I suspect the lack of sidewalks is going to be a little stretch, but the two-way left turn lanes on East Grand have to have some other consideration for speed, I would think, unless we really do have to wait until we have accidents before they'll take note of it. So I think it's worth at least talking to them about that and would be willing to move forward with the other recommendations. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, I've already stated my position. If you're looking for, authorization to move forward, at least in part with what we have tonight, I like what you did with Rancho Parkway, and I like that strategy, the approach. Give it a shot, see if it works, and if the channelization tends to improve, then we can take another look at the speed limit. And I concur with Olahan Alley as well. I think in terms of quantifying East Grand Avenue, Don, an approach I think would be to maybe in some of the high volume areas, throw a driveway counter out there, particularly on the weekends. The other thing, Councilmember Costello raised a good point. It's not just those areas. Washington Mutual is one. In terms of quantifying that, a few photographs taken at the right time, I mean, would certainly depict, potentially unsafe conditions at the speeds that we have now. And the same along Branch. I think we can document pedestrian traffic. We can document the absence of sidewalks. We can do it. So I would agree with everyone else. I have no problem moving forward with Olahan Alley and with Rancho Parkway. I need to come back on the others.
We'd have to modify the resolution somewhat, but we'd like to move forward with those items.
Okay, you need a motion tonight on this?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I'll make a motion, if I can do this right. Right. Mr. Mayor, I would move that the City Council implement the channelization plan on Rancho Parkway and follow up with a separate radar speed survey several months after its completion for Council's consideration, and that the Council adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande establishing speed limits on West Branch Street segment of Briscoe Road to Oak Park at a speed limit of 40 miles an hour, and Olahan Alley at a speed limit of 15 miles an hour, and direct staff to come back for further consideration on East Grand Avenue and the West Branch Street segment Vernon to Briscoe Road.
Okay. And is there an assumption in the motion that we're okay, or does it require any action on our part with the segment of West Branch from Briscoe to Oak Park? Did you include that?
Yes, you did.
I did.
Okay.
Remained at 40.
Right. Remained at 40. Okay. Sorry. All right. We have a motion and
I'll
a second.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please. So it's not our fault if you're falling asleep over there, Tim. So. No, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Okay. We have a second and our motion and a second, and there's no further discussion, so we'll do a roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to 11A. You're still here, Angie.
Yeah, you saved the most exciting for last, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay, good evening. I am pleased to present the first quarter budget report for fiscal year 2006-07. Overall, the general fund budget is on target when compared to the prior year. Expenditures are at 24% and revenues are at 9%. The revenues are below 25% because the city receives the majority of its property tax revenue in December and April, and the triple flip payments are received in February and May. The projected general fund balance is approximately $2 million, which is 15% of appropriations. The projected fund balance assumes that revenues are received exactly as budgeted and expenditures and transfers are completed. Since this is not always the case, staff expects to be close to the 20% fund balance goal at year-end. The budget report includes approximately $218,000 in carryover appropriations for the general fund, with the majority being for CIP projects that are still in progress and equipment that had not been purchased by year-end. Finally, in preparing this report, I hate to admit this, I inadvertently listed the total contractual services in the water fund as the amount that they were appropriating. I listed it as $41,900, and it should have been $700. So the water fund's doing much better than, thanks to Councilmember Guthrie for bringing that to my attention. And I'd like to take this time to for any questions.
Well, I had a lot of questions until I read all of the questions that the Mayor Pro Tem had, and you answered all of those. So,
we did them in writing, huh?
Yeah. Are there questions for Angie on this?
No more.
No? Do you have any more?
No more questions.
Oh, okay. Is that a motion?
It will be. If no one else has any comments, I'll make it a motion.
Well, we'll see. Councilmember Dickens?
Yeah, ditto. Looks good.
Yeah, I did have some concerns about the amount of additional appropriations, which prompted my questions, but I am satisfied with the answers. So thank you.
Okay, good. All right, then I'm going to come back to Councilmember Costello's motion to approve the carryover appropriations for Schedule A and the budget adjustments and recommendations shown on Schedule A. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Council Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. That takes us to City Council reports. And I think I'm going to make this short and sweet. We SOCOG meets next week, and it's several items associated with our last few meetings that have since become old business, so I'm not going to spend time on that. South County Sanitation District, we've been, again, sort of wrapped up in the fee study, and we're having a special meeting on the 29th, I believe, to finalize that. And it'll be a public meeting regarding the sewer rates. And that concludes my report. Mayor Pro Tem.
I missed the last RAC meeting in there. The next one is next Wednesday. I've reported there hasn't been a SCAP meeting since our last report. And I did attend the Zone 3 meeting. There was actually an action that I think we all need to be aware of there, and that was has apparently been going on for a while, though I didn't know about it till I got there. There's been some discussion about changing the release amounts for the habitat preservation, HCP plan as it's called, and changing them to actually fit the flows that are in the streams rather than a constant release. And the request had gone out that the county go ahead and change their plan and implement the HCP plan. The county came back saying they wanted every agency to sign on, basically saying that they were agreeing to, like, there might be something lost by one agency not signing, by one of the members of the group not signing. So that's where it stands. I don't know enough about the history of it to have any idea what the Board of Supervisors is going to do with it, but it does sound like to me 50-50 that it'll just come back and require some other action.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor, I have no report tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie is attending the South County Area Transit in my stead, and the South County Youth Coalition I've not been able to attend, so no reports.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Jim, for handling that advisory board meeting. It's been a long process trying to get that thing approved, and I think the hang-up is still that the federal government is just sitting on it, so we're at risk. APCD met and is currently updating the strategic plan. One key thing, we've lost two long-term staff members from APCD, and it'll be kind of difficult to replace them, but we'll go forward and do that. I think we're losing three of the sitting, or maybe four of the sitting members of the directors. Maybe they've been termed out or lost elections and won't be back with us. Fire Oversight Committee met, and things continue to go very well in terms of cooperation between Grover and Arroyo Grande. Of course, we're in the process of replacing the chief. Still having a little bit of trouble with Oceano hiring the training officer position, and we're exploring some other possibilities for that, and that's coming up in the next meeting for some discussion. Also considering the possibility of working on a joint EOC. So there's some interesting possibilities that might help continue to save money and also help make both of us a little bit more efficient. A Fire Consolidation and Oversight Committee has not met, so there's no report for that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll catch up to Councilmember Arnold next time. That takes us to item 13, City Council Member Items. There's none listed on the agenda. But I do have one late breaking that I didn't have a chance to talk about. But I've been approached by actually a couple of folks who inquired as to the status of.
I'll cover it in under that item if it's okay.
Okay. We want to make sure we keep the Village Improvement Association apprised of that item, and obviously because of the nature of it, they're going to be here. But I don't know if they understand. Do they understand that 227 is part of it?
We've been working very closely on it. We haven't briefed them just recently, but they're aware of what we're recommending, and we've been working closely on all the items in the enhancement plan.
Okay, good. I think it'd be good discussion. Then we'll wait for that item. Okay, 14 city manager items, none this evening?
None.
Council communication? Staff communication, any?
Let's go back to council communications. Maybe a little premature, but I want to express my gratitude and appreciation to Councilmember Dickens for his service. I think this is his last formal meeting. It's been a pleasure working with you, and thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. This isn't your last one. Is it?
My last formal meeting.
Well, your last formal meeting. You know, we have the reorg meeting, though. Right. That's coming up.
Yeah, that's where the formal goodbyes.
Okay. Well, then there'll be much more to come.
Sure.
As you leave service. You're not getting away that easy. I'm going to put some thought into this. So, but I echo. We've all enjoyed working with you, Jim. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Takes us to staff communication. No staff communication.
No, But I would also echo those comments, and we will also be working on arranging some special event to also give you an opportunity to expand on those comments.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going to wish that we hadn't expanded, but... Yeah. Okay, takes us to community comments and suggestions, and we have no community in the audience at this time, so we will adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you.